Welcome to the S-Rank Supports Podcast. My name is Sai.
And I'm Gabriel.
And we are starting this episode after laughing way too hard about stupid crap. But this is really serious, actually.
This is really serious.
This is really serious.
Dead serious topic.
Really serious things on this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dark things.
Dark things?
Dark, so mature. How you feel about it? Thematic material.
Like what? You want to elaborate on that? I thought you were going to use this as a segue, but I don't know how this could segue. It's more like E10 plus.
E10 plus? What's the one above M?
Isn't it A?
Is it A? Oh, it is A.
A.
A-rated content.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And he goes, yeah, huh,
yeah,
huh, huh.
And everyone knows that is the sound of Link throwing his steel around. Yep, I said it, and I don't regret it. That's Link, baby.
Which Link game? Which Legend of Link? Which Zelda game?
Link, Zelda,
which one
Link
do you want to talk about? You gotta take.
I feel like it's less of a want and more of a need, I guess, to talk about Tears of the Kingdom.
Because from what we've discussed, you would rather never talk about this.
I'd rather. I guess it's rather I don't. It's not that I don't need to talk about or don't want to talk about it, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And more about maybe you can explain to me why Tears of the Kingdom was so great. Because I am very much in the area of thought regarding Tears of the Kingdom that it is more Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel fresh enough to me to warrant... to warrant its creation, really, because I'd almost rather they have spent their resources on a completely new title. And this will be very subjective. Mm-hmm. I will just preface this also by saying I haven't finished Tears of the Kingdom, but I am three quarters of the way through all the major interactions, the new equivalent of the beasts,
the divine beasts
that were in the first in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, what are they called? The regional phenomenon.
Regional phenomenon. Yeah, I'm like three quarters of the way through those.
Okay.
When I put it down because I was already getting a little bored because mm-hmm. I felt like it was more of the same thing, and it wasn't really enticing.
Did you make a deliberate choice to put the game down?
Yes,
you did.
I did.
It wasn't just you got caught up with other things, or
no. I deliberately put it down, and to go off of that, I did something very similar with Breath of the Wild, where I really liked Breath of the Wild, and then I put it down because it was taking so much time and I wanted to fully immerse myself in it, which happens with a lot of games for me. Mm-hmm. And then I revisited it later, but I didn't pick up where I left off. I did a whole new game because I wanted to experience all of it again and then take it all the way to Ganon, mm-hmm. which I did. And it was really fun. I probably wouldn't do that with Tears of the Kingdom. If I came back to it, I would pick up with my save and just, you know.
Oh, I thought you meant maybe you'll come back to it.
I decided.
Well, before we get started talking about it, let me give you a little bit of credit because I think there's actually a lot of people out there who I've seen several other people talking about the game. We're getting to the point after it's been released for a while where with such a big game, people are finally like condensing their thoughts and putting reviews out about it.
Yeah.
Or at least a lot of like video essay people are doing that. There's plenty of people out there who have a lot of critiques about the game, specifically in ways that it compares to Breath of the Wild, in ways that it doesn't feel like something new. It kind of feels like the same thing again.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like that's why you wanted to have this conversation in the first place, right?
Yeah. Because I used the word
remaster.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a strong word because I acknowledge that there's a lot of new material in Tears of the Kingdom. Mm-hmm. But I guess the real motive behind having this conversation was partly having my feelings be validated. It's reassuring to know that others are out there who think maybe it is, you know, a little too similar to the original. Mm-hmm. But also to understand maybe what people like most about it. Because sure. I know that a huge component of Tears of the Kingdom is centered around the building mechanics. Because mm-hmm. now there's a hand or some hand ability.
Ultra hand
that you pick up pieces and you stitch them together, and then wildly creative players are creating monstrously cool machines in order to fulfill certain functions.
Or massively stupid.
But
continue.
But that's part of, I think, the genius of the flexibility of the tool, mm-hmm. That you can do something either super creative or super stupid with it and still have a good time.
Sure.
And I really respect that. Maybe it's just that is not for me, I guess. It just doesn't feel like a Zelda experience mm-hmm. anymore. It's maybe like a sandbox or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Let me ask, can I ask you what, tell me more about your experience with Breath of the Wild, what your impressions of it were when you were done with it, and then what were you wanting or expecting going into Tears of the Kingdom? You ended up beating Breath of the Wild, right?
Yeah,
I did. Okay, so you ended up finishing it. What were your lasting impressions from it, and then how did those contribute to you going into trying out Tears of the Kingdom? So I feel like that might help frame a little
bit
where you're
Yeah, that's a good question. So I finished Breath of the Wild, and overall, I was really impressed. I basically played it twice, because the first time I played it, I did everything. I felt like I did everything that you possibly could without fighting Ganon. Mm-hmm. And then when I went back to it, well, I was like, I don't want to just pick it up and go straight to Ganon. I want to get into it. So I started over and then did the whole thing. But this time, after the four divine beasts, I actually beat Ganon. You know, and that was partly to prep for Tears of the Kingdom, because I was kind of excited for it at the time. Mm-hmm. When I beat it, I was really satisfied, I would say. You know, I have to be interested in a game to play it twice, you know, to any extent. And I was fascinated and really enticed by the idea that Breath of the Wild had such a cultivated open world. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I could go anywhere and run into something, you know, 20 seconds later that would captivate my interest, maybe get a Korok seed or something. And then mm-hmm. another 20, 30 seconds walking in a different direction, I'd find something else. And it was just kind of that really cool, seamless experience where I felt like, you know, there's always something to sort of do. Mm-hmm. Tears, when talking about what to expect from Tears, I guess I wanted them to elevate that mm-hmm. somehow. And I wanted maybe something a little bit more dense, mm-hmm. I think, because I thought they would expand the world maybe a little bit more. And they did, but they didn't do it horizontally. They did it vertically.
Right. And yeah, that gets like the whole selling point of the game, right?
Yeah. And that gets into a major thing for me, because when I first saw Tears of the Kingdom advertisements, I was both a little annoyed and really excited, because one of the only other Zelda games that I've really enjoyed is controversially Skyward Sword, which I know a lot of people didn't like. But the idea of starting in this kind of above the cloud city and then descending mm-hmm. to your major objectives and then seeing a whole huge world under those clouds to explore really captivated middle school me, or whenever I was playing Skyward Sword. And it really felt, and so I guess I got my hopes up a little too high, because one of my major issues with Tears of the Kingdom was they expanded the game vertically and added a upper level, like mm-hmm. a sky world. But the islands, and I don't know if you've experienced this, I found them to be incredibly repetitive.
They're not only repetitive, but they're super empty. Overall,
extremely sparse.
Yeah, well, and that's why I wanted to kind of give you more credit earlier, because that's one of the major criticisms from a lot of people. And when I was playing it, at first, I think I was kind of I think I was kind of just having like the initial shock value of like how cool it was to have this like another like vertical plane to be on. But like even the first like starting area, you know, the big island in the middle that's essentially like Tears of the Kingdom's Great Plateau, right? Like I even remember having thought at the very beginning of the game, I was like so captivated by the colors and the visuals of everything. I thought it was a really gorgeous setting, but like it was pretty cut and dry. Like it was overall pretty empty. There were some enemies and the I'm forgetting what they're called, but the robots that like help you out. That's gonna kill me. I can't remember
the ancient robots. I thought ancient was in the no. That's the items they drop. You get like ancient blades or something like that.
Yeah. So I mean, so those guys are scattered around, and it's in some ways maybe narratively it's like justified because it's supposed to be like this ancient civilization that's not really like bustling anymore. You know what I mean? But yeah. But yeah, I definitely had that thought even at the start of the game. Like this is a little empty. But then particularly in the later, like, end of my playthrough, because I mean, I have something like 150 hours in the game. Like, I played a lot of it.
Okay.
And one of the things I kind of got to was it was like, okay, I felt like I did everything else, and now I'm like, I want 100% all of the stuff to do in the Sky Islands. And like, yeah, when you get to go on a really around them and seeing them, not only are they like empty and kind of repetitive, but like sometimes they almost literally look like they were copy and pasted.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing really like different about some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's also partially because of the fact that there's just not a ton of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. So maybe that's why they feel so empty, is because there's not even a lot of them to begin with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's pretty valid.
Yeah. And mechanically what you do in those Sky Islands, it's very samey. There's often like a portion of the landscape that rotates, right? Mm-hmm. When you hit like an orb that controls like a certain like pillar, but it's on its side, and then you rotate that clockwise 2 times, and that's how you get a walkway. And that's where you go pick up your gem and you put that in the shrine slot, and then you get your shrine. And I think that's like on every one of those
floating items.
And by the time I was doing like the fourth one, I was a little uninterested because it was, you were literally carrying a gem from one place to another. Right. So it feels like a mini fetch quest.
A little bit.
There was, what really bugged me was the ones where the gem is hidden like on a separate island in the distance, and you have to build a flying contraption in order to go get it and then bring it back.
Yeah.
And already the first time I did that, I was like, oh, I guess that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time I did it, I was immediately annoyed because it was the exact sort of situation. It was the exact same situation. Mm-hmm. There was nothing fresh about doing it a second time, you know, that separated it from the first time I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to add spice into it. I tried looking at that situation through the lens of the Ultra Hand and be like, well, was there some sort of device or build or construction that I could have come up with creatively to expedite that process and maybe make it more fun? But I just assumed, maybe incorrectly, that the fastest way to get that gem back to where it needed to be was bird platform and two fan things and a steering wheel.
Right.
And that's all I needed, you know, and that was the fastest way of doing it. And so I don't know if I was missing something, but it was like the second time I did that specifically, is fly that gem back to where the shrine needed to be, I lost a lot of the will to kind of like keep playing the game.
Okay.
Because the Sky World was, I think, like one of the things I was most excited about. I wanted it to rekindle that feeling that I had in Skyward Sword, where there's this massive landscape below the clouds, and it kind of opens up your world.
Yeah.
But going in the opposite direction, going to the sky.
Right.
And then you get there and it's, you know, so sparse. I found that to be rather uninspiring. It was a big
disappointment for you. Yeah. I think in specifically those puzzles or semi-fetch quests, I think in several of them, if not all of them, like the materials the game has, the Zonai devices that are just there sitting like next to the gem are usually a different combination. I think that's meant to like encourage you to try out different contraptions or like to be more creative. It seems like you didn't really feel like that encouraged you to be creative, or you felt like...
No, and I probably know why. And it's because on those Sky Islands is also when they put the giant gumball machines of Zonai bubbles.
Yeah.
And that is where you need to cash out,
right?
You know, for what it costs some sort of Zonai currency, right?
Yeah.
For those. Yeah. And by... just a few dozen hours into the game, I already had plenty to kind of, I made it a habit to pump, you know, five sets of like five into those gumball machines.
I did the exact same thing,
like,
actually.
Yeah. And collect like 25 of these smaller Zonai device capsules I could break open at any time. And if I looked, given that option, if you then gave me a situation where I was looking at a different pile of arguably less convenient components for building my bird, I'm just going to go into my inventory and grab what I what I could, you know, use to make my life easier and more convenient, because I also earned that stuff by just collecting Zonai currency that, you know, to spend at those gumball machines.
Right.
So in a way, I earned my own convenience, but also it's not that fun when you're, I guess it almost feels like a microtransaction, honestly, is when you're spending what you currency that you earned on an object to avoid a scenario that has been specifically designed by a designer. And I think that a microtransaction is like a really good word for that, because that's what I was feeling.
Yeah.
I felt like I could disregard those situations rather than have them force me to think critically.
Interesting. Okay. I've never heard that. That's a cool take on that. Okay, so then next thing that I think of is, so obviously the Sky Islands were a big disappointment for you. But then I think what a lot of people think is so new about Tears of the Kingdom is that, yeah, even though overall the, you know, the ground level is the same landscape, there's so many new things to do in it. There's new enemy types. There's the caves that are introduced. There's new towns and there's new story scenarios. And a lot of people are like, yeah, it's like the new, this is the same world, but now all of a sudden there's all these new things to do in it. And sometimes it actually makes the things that seemed old, like old locations, like feel fresh and feel like you're interacting with them in a new way. Was that not an effect it had on you? Or what was the expectation for your like player experience going into it? And did you not feel like the new things that were added to that, or even I'm forgetting Fuse, like the whole Fuse mechanic with weapons now. Did you feel like that none of that really really stuck with you and didn't feel like it made things fresh enough?
Not necessarily. I think some things were more impactful to me than others. The story beats were a lot cooler than I think. I almost said base game. The Breath of the Wild was.
Yeah.
I think some of those characters and scenarios are far more interesting than they were in Breath of the Wild. And I thought that that was a huge step in making the world just feel more real and alive. I feel like every village that you walked into and all the characters you met in Breath of the Wild are really disconnected. But I was okay with that because it made the landscape feel better and it put emphasis on my journey between villages.
Yeah, that was fun.
And now it's just, it's different. And I like it when it comes to, you know, story beats and those kind of side missions and the mystery of seeing Zelda in the distance, but then she disappears, stuff like that. Even though that's really just a goose chase, I think it's interesting because of all the people that I meet who maybe see Zelda or something like that and the towns that are going through different things. I do think that's fascinating. The terrain itself, I don't think it's changed. There are some times where I don't think it's changed that much, really. Like
I think overall it's exactly the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a little boring. To be honest, I don't know. You make minimal changes to the terrain, but you add caves, I guess, which was sort of is the saving grace here. But maybe I'm missing something with caves, but the caves I've walked into are just so small.
Yeah.
They're so small. And I haven't found like a big labyrinthine kind of cave system that's like really intrigued me.
Gotcha.
It's really kind of like you go into a cave, there's like a left turn, and then there's like the frog, the obligatory frog that lives in the caves, the bubble frog.
Bubble frog.
And then you leave the cave. And I don't know. Yeah, not a big cave guy. I don't know what I'm missing. I don't know what I'm missing. And then we can talk about the fuse mechanic after this, but in reaction to anything that I've said or the terrain or the story, what are your thoughts? Because I think you've spent a lot longer playing Tears than I have.
Yeah. I think I'm not necessarily saying whether it's like a definitively effective or ineffective way to do things, but I think my experience with their choice of keeping the map overall the same, I think it was overall positive. I think I am the same as a lot of people where kind of the effect was it was something that was familiar, but now I'm seeing it through a different perspective. With sometimes there's different enemies hanging out around and there's like enemy bases and the caves everywhere. Also, there's like more things to do, I think, with like side quests, and there's like, I don't even know what you would call them. They're not side quests, but they're like almost like mini quests. Like there's that guy that we have to like help him like hold up the sign. Yeah. There's like those little things like around, which on that I felt like was almost closer to a like Korok Seed than anything else. It was like those little puzzles are everywhere.
Yeah.
So like overall it didn't really bug me. I mean, I'm also somebody that played a ton of Breath of the Wild. So obviously I'm somebody that feels connected to the game and really enjoyed it. I'm actually curious. I'm fascinated that you liked the story as much as you did, or you felt like it was as effective as it was. I think that's one of the main criticisms people have.
Really?
Yeah. I think people think the overall story is a little more enticing than Breath of the Wild, but particularly like the Great Phenomenon events. I'm definitely in the camp of people that feel like they're just like after you do the first one.
Yeah.
They're all the same, other than like the more dungeony like thing you have to do to like solve it.
Yeah.
And the actual like gameplay of it, like the fact that every time you beat it, you get to talk to the past like ancestor or like the spirit of the person that was with what is his name? The goat guy.
I'm gonna call him Zoro.
Zoro.
I feel like there's a Z in there somewhere.
Maybe. I want to say Ramu. But I don't know if that's right.
Maybe.
If I say Ramu, then I think of the lightning guy from Final Fantasy 16.
I know.
That actually is a bad
taste. We did that episode.
All right, different topic. Move on. But yeah, like every time after that, they all like they tell you like the history of like Hyrule in the exact same way. They tell you the exact same story. It's kind of obnoxious, actually. Yeah. Like, because you feel like you do like one of the like four pillars of the story, and then you learn the exact same information four times. I don't think there's actually any new information in any of those four repetitions. They even show the exact same like cutscenes and images.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like every time.
So yeah, it's like all the champions like ganging up on Ganon.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a little repetitive. But as far as like the tears, which are like the memories from Breath of the Wild, but kind of repurposed here, like I really, really liked those. I think that's what a lot of people really enjoy about the story. My experience with that was really cool. The memories were cool in the same way, but I had a much better experience with the tears in the way that, like, the order in which you get them is going to be pretty unique to your experience with the game, and it kind of creates cool coincidences in the way that you learn about events going on.
Yeah.
So I had a couple really cool
moments just in my own experience with the tears that made that pretty cool. And then what else did you talk about? You talked about the caves. I wonder if maybe you haven't seen enough of them.
Maybe.
There's definitely a ton of them that are very small and there's not a lot going on. And I don't think any of them are even close to like typical Zelda dungeon size things. Not even close. Nothing like, I played like half a Skyward Sword. I actually haven't beat it, but I played like half of it. So nothing like Skyward Sword dungeon level.
Right.
But there's a handful of them that are like pretty decently sized and there's lots of branching paths and walls to break open going upwards and downwards and sideways. And some of them are pretty intricate things, but I can understand that that doesn't add anything to like your experience with the game on literally like the base level.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And to respond to, I think, some of the narrative beats, now that you remind me, because I put it down, I think, last summer before I came here, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to take this into the academic year.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember some of the regional phenomena being very lackluster. I think I started with the bird people. And and then I got a Tulin as my first partner. And I found him very insufferable. Very insufferable.
As a character? Or
He annoyed me. I don't know if it was just because he's young and I was expecting the bravado of Revali from the first game. The power that you get from him is like useless.
Really?
Yeah, the sideways flying thing that doesn't like push you very far.
Yeah.
I brought that up to someone else. I forget who. And they were like, well, Revali's Gale was equally as useless in the first game. But I was like, I don't know. For me in Breath of the Wild, sometimes I see a giant cliff face and something inside me is just like, I want to climb that no matter what it takes. I thought Revali's
Gale was one of the most
And it gives
ones.
Me a big head. So I had that sentiment. But I don't think, so anything involving like Tulin and his story of being like a brat, I guess, of being trying to guide the village wasn't, maybe it's that one specifically wasn't landing with me. I remember when we finally got to the temple, I thought that temple was pretty sick. Okay. Yeah, the air temple was pretty awesome.
It's one of the cooler ones. I think the journey up there is even cooler. Like the fact you have to travel all the way up is really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So it had some cool functional moments, but in terms of story, I guess when you say story, my favorite moments, I guess, are at the beginning of the game when you finally get off the starting area and you go back to Hyrule Castle and the little village that's like in front of it.
Yeah.
With the courtyard where a lot of people have like set up shop. It feels very lively.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was actually, I'm glad you brought that up. That was one of my favorite parts about like my first 10 hours with the game is like, I think it's intentional that Breath of the Wild is so empty. It's kind of the whole point. It's kind of like a post-apocalyptic Hyrule. And so everyone's kind of sealed off from each other in some ways. I think maybe that was an intentional choice, which I think is what makes it so cool in Tears of the Kingdom that like you actually see like characters from other towns like present in towns that isn't from their race, and like you see people interacting with each other. One of my favorite moments, other than what you just mentioned, like with the people in front of the castle, was like where it feels very lively. I remember walking or running like down a path that like connects two towns, and just like on this one journey that I had, I passed a Hylian, I passed a Goron, I passed oh my gosh, what are they called? The people in the desert.
The Gerudo.
The Gerudo, yes. I passed one of the Gerudos I think multiple of them too. But it was just really cool that like now I'm walking down this path and it's as if in this world now, like as Hyrule is rebuilding, like these all these people that are now like a part of the world and like also traveling around.
Yeah.
That was a really cool moment, I remember.
I wonder if they simply just added more people
maybe
to the world.
Yeah.
Because it feels like it.
Yeah. or just more like AI paths, like just NPC walking paths. Yeah, maybe. Or programmed into it or
maybe
something.
The paths are just more like visible.
Yeah.
You can see them.
Yeah.
I do want to go back to the fuse mechanic specifically, okay. Because that is quite the gameplay change.
Yeah, it's a big
compared
topic.
To the first one. And I want to hear your thoughts before I put my two cents in. Okay. And just for anyone who isn't familiar with Tears of the Kingdom, the fuse mechanic involves Link essentially picking up items, some valuable, some less valuable, and they have an associated attack value. And if you choose not to use them in like cooking or selling or for some other purpose, you can attach them to sticks, for example, and create stronger weapons. And then those become his main utility in fights, as opposed to Breath of the Wild, where you could simply find a really nice sword
right.
with a high attack power,
right.
add it to your collection.
Right. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's sort of the replacement for, not the replacement because it's still there, but replacement for like the findable, breakable weapons in Breath of the Wild, right? I had an interesting experience with them. I obviously, because I played so much of it, I got used to it well into my playthrough. Overall, I think I like it. I thought it was... I think it's intentionally designed so that you have to spend time mixing and matching things to find out things that you like and things that match your play style and things that are strong and things that aren't, which I think I appreciate a little bit more now. At the beginning of the game, I remember being terribly confused.
Right.
Actually, my younger brother was for a little, I mean, him and I both started playing it basically right at launch, like on release day, I was playing it. But I think by the time we were a couple of weeks into release, he had played a lot more than I had. And I remember going home for the summer for a little bit, and he was watching me play, and he was like, there was at one point, he was like, why, like, what do you, he was watching me do a battle, and he just was like struggling to like
to contain it
to he contain himself to he had something to say and it was that, dude, you're not why aren't you fusing things, like why aren't
yeah.
I basically wasn't fusing anything. I don't even know if I knew you could fuse things.
Really?
I don't remember. All I know is that I was like attacking like a bokoblin like den or boss horde and like using all of these like five power weapons, and it was taking forever.
Good on you.
Yeah, I guess so.
And you thought nothing was wrong. You thought like, oh, this is a Legend of Zelda experience.
I don't know. I actually don't remember.
Hitting them with a twig.
I guess so. I mean, I don't remember why I was having such a hard time with it. Or maybe I wasn't equipping like particularly strong items or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember what I was doing, but I wasn't doing what you're supposed to do. And it took me a while, and basically my brother telling me that I was being an idiot to figure it out. And then from there, like I was off to the races trying everything.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't know. Basically, I guess the way it works is if you don't fuse something to it, the weapon breaks really easily. But then as soon as you do fuse something to it, it has like the durability of a normal weapon. Because basically everything you pick up is a like decayed weapon, right?
Yeah.
Or what I forget what they're called. Rusted weapon, I think. Unless you're finding the special weapons that are like in the chasms down below, or if you're finding one of the Octoroks that can like suck up the rusted weapon and spit it back at you. Those are the only two ways, I think, in Tears of the Kingdom to get non-rusted weapons without fusing something. So, yeah. Overall, I think I enjoyed it. I think... I don't know. I think it kind of fit the overall theme of the game of with like creativity and like creating your own things. And so I guess in that way it sat well with me. I don't know if I necessarily like it more than just finding cool weapons in Breath of the Wild. One thing I will say though, and I didn't realize that I related to it until I heard a reviewer talking about it, but I think it's interesting. And again, this isn't really my own original idea, but like in Breath of the Wild, because it's all about finding like really powerful weapons. In some ways, it kind of like de-incentivizes you to actually use your stronger weapons, and you kind of hold on to the ones that are really good because you don't want them to break.
Yeah.
And so that was something I definitely did, and I never thought about until I heard this person talking about it.
I did that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so, I enjoyed doing that.
Okay.
Almost. It wasn't out of desperation. Mm-hmm. It was like, I found a cool weapon.
Yeah.
I earned it, did whatever puzzle was blocking it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to save this for a situation that I really want to use it because I know that it's going to break.
Yeah. My thing is I just never used them. Like, I, like, never used
them. Yeah, well, I finished the game and had, like, all the best, right. 10 of the best swords, right. 10 of the best spears,
right.
and 10 yeah. of the best two-handed weapons, you know.
Yeah.
Just stacked up, ready to go for a fight that I was, no fight, apparently, because I was still using twigs against Ganon, because I wanted to protect those items.
Did you beat him with twigs?
No, I can't remember what I beat him with. I think I got the Master Sword by then.
You ever watch those videos of people going straight to Ganon?
Straight. I've heard people so do twigs. That. Those are FromSoft players, and I'm not ready for that. As someone who hasn't beaten Elden Ring, but did beat Margit.
I've never thought about that. It's like it's very Dark Souls-esque to try to go do that in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, something about that, because I guess this is a tangent, but I want to explore it because I've seen Elden Ring players, because as soon as your character spawns in, aren't they like completely naked or something like that? Yeah. They've got a loincloth.
Yeah, and Link is like, find everything.
Link is the exact same way. Right. Like you can strip him down to a loincloth and just jump off the plateau and go straight to Ganon. And so something about the nakedness of our silent hero going straight to the boss is very just a Souls-like sort of imagery.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, getting back to the fuse mechanic, it's still not jiving with me. And I don't know if that's because the way it works, right, is you take the attack value of your base weapon and you take the attack value of the attachment and you just add them together when they fuse, right? Is that
Just adding them, I think. Yeah.
I haven't fused anything that has gotten me remotely close to the nicer weapons I had in Breath of the Wild.
Mm.
So part of me is, again, maybe skill issue. Maybe I haven't found the best items yet or the best base weapons. And I'm not fusing correctly. So maybe I'm having the same moment you had before you, you know, your brother gave you advice, you know. But part of me really feels like they had to dumb down sort of the power level, the maximum power level of Link, you know, in order to make fights a little bit more interesting or challenging or something like that.
I definitely felt like the combat, especially at the beginning, was harder. Again, it's because I hadn't figured things out yet, but I felt like the game was overall harder combat wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, who do you think their audience was when they were developing Tears of the Kingdom? It's probably not new Zelda players, right? It's probably, everyone who played Breath of the Wild and let's get them back in the ring for round two.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they wanted to make it accessible to both new players and old players. I think the fact that the map is the same kind of adheres to newcomers because it's not something... I mean, either way, it would be something brand new, I guess. But I think especially story-wise, the way that it kind of presents itself as its own thing, I think adheres to new people. I mean, apart from the physics and the controls and the like visuals and the worlds, like everything's pretty new about it.
So the game...
Yeah.
Apart from the game.
I mean,
the game's pretty new.
I mean, if you've played Breath of the Wild, you know it's a sequel. It's the same stuff as before, but in a different game. But if you haven't played it before, then like, yeah, I guess it's a new game. You're right. I guess so.
Yeah.
But is it a remaster?
I think I was being maybe a little harsh. I think Tears of the Kingdom has...
Good title, though.
Good title. I think Tears has redeeming qualities to it. I just don't think the I think so much of the game's appeal is resting on players going crazy with the Ultra Hand and creating fantastical contraptions. Mm-hmm. And that gameplay experience is not what I was, it's not what I was looking for in a Breath of the Wild remake.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe that's just why it's not for me.
Yeah.
But there's nothing bad or there's nothing wrong with the game itself. Breath of the Wild, I loved Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. And Tears of the Kingdom is essentially the same thing. Mm-hmm. So fundamentally, I have no issue with the game itself. Mm-hmm. It's just that years later, when was Breath of the Wild? 2018 or something like that?
2017.
And Tears is 2023. Mm-hmm. 6 years later, I was expecting something different. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily more, but different. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that wasn't a huge ask, given that they spent 6 years on it and were literally reusing character models, engine, terrain, mm-hmm. art assets, almost everything.
Right.
I didn't think that would be such a big ask, but it just seems like it was just Breath of the Wild, but like again.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know. You're saying you acknowledge it's something different and overall new, but you just wish it was more so. For a 6 year gap, you were expecting it to be a little more of a step.
It took way too small of a step, in my opinion.
If you had to choose one over the other, what would you choose?
See, that's a good question, because I think Tears of the Kingdom is just Breath of the Wild again. Mm-hmm. So
But it's different. You've talked about some of the mechanics that you don't like very much and some of the design stuff that doesn't really appeal to you.
Yeah.
Do you think you had a better experience with Breath of the Wild, or do you think the new stuff in Tears of the Kingdom is
I would Breath of the Wild all the way because Tears of the Kingdom is too much emphasis on the Ultra Hand, which oftentimes I don't even enjoy.
Yeah.
So I would totally go with Breath of the Wild. If someone came along and was like, I've only got the money for one and I want Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom, which one should I buy? Obviously, I'll probably say Tears of the Kingdom because it's 6 years newer and generally people like it.
But what would you pick? If you only had $60 and you never
If someone was going to take away one of my two copies of Breath of the Wild and Tears, I would say, please take Tears away. I don't need it.
I will play
Breath of the Wild over and over again. But Tears, I'm already just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's missing that something.
Missing that little something.
That little something.
Yeah.
Come on. Validate my feelings here. Validate.
I think your opinion's very valid.
Thank you.
See, I asked you that question and now I feel like I can't even answer it myself because I feel like you're so different. I feel like they are pretty different games. I feel like
mechanically, story, you feel like everything they did and
maybe just experience wise. I feel like I would want to play, because now that I've played both multiple times, I feel like I'd want to, like, if I wanted a more like personal, like spacious, kind of hollow, but in like a meditative way experience. That's what I love about Breath of the Wild. But if I wanted something that's like more kind of like a sandboxy feel that you were talking about, where it's super open and there's tons of things to do, but like I think that's pretty different from Breath of the Wild. I think there's loads of things to do in the first game, but comparing it to the Tears of the Kingdom, I think makes it seem even more like empty and spacious. So I don't know. I think
So it's almost an aesthetic difference.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
That's fascinating.
I mean, I almost don't think of them as sequels in my head. I kind of think of them as different things.
Really?
Yeah. Almost.
Wow.
I don't know if that's too strong of a statement, but like,
I bet I could show you footage from both games.
Okay.
From just maybe specific areas, mm-hmm. and could ask, you know, is this Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be able to answer.
Maybe. Unless there's UI on the screen.
Oh, yeah, because their UI got worse.
Worse?
Yeah, because they put black like on white. Anyway, the colors... the colors, they don't work out. They made it less accessible. It's harder to read.
Okay.
The sort function, disaster.
Mm. Okay.
Horrible. Yeah, there are so many accessibility. Having one row to select your items, oh, made fight, and get you have to scroll through all of that. Come on.
Yeah, that's...
We're talking one of the premier design companies in the world for games, and you can't come up with something than one row of icons that scroll side to side with poor filter options.
If I had one criticism and I had to get rid of all other thoughts about the game, if I had to take one criticism about the game
and
nail it to my chest,
yeah,
it would be the searching. Yeah. Through, but like that thing is awful.
Yeah.
Especially because you're collecting like, I want to say hundreds. I mean, you're collecting hundreds and dozens
of items.
Of items. All of which you confuse to things.
All of which you confuse. All of them have some sort of redeeming value when fused.
Yeah. The idea I had while playing was like, I don't know why they couldn't have like, because you can sort them by different things in the menu, like when you press plus, right?
Yep.
Because it's all horizontal, like I thought it would have made perfect sense for them to have instead like three vertical versions of that search bar for the different types of things, and then you could horizontally move between them, and then that way you could like go up different, like if you're like I want a monster part, right, I'll go to this column and then I'll search upwards and downwards for it.
I'll raise you one and I'd say just do a mini, because you know when you go to the full menu you have like a 5x5 chart of your items and you can flip through the pages. I would do a mini one, 3x3, just bring up a 3x3 icon panel.
Yeah.
And then have sort options based on effect or something like that, and then be able to scroll through entire sets or maybe dozens of items at a time.
I like that. That's a good idea.
Maybe even if you find that you're using one item over and over again, add not only like a favorite option, but an icon to the side, like three icons to the left, three icons to the very right on the borders of the screen, and just keep those for your absolute favorite items. Like you can map them to these side columns, you know, and if it's one of those items, one of your go-tos, like the bright bloom flower when you're exploring the underground, like I would map that to a permanent slot, you know, and all the other stuff that's like super circumstantial, you know, I'll flip through at least a chart of icons, you know. So they could have done that better, for sure. But that's your one criticism.
If I had to pick one, I had to pick only one.
What are your others? Do you have any others? Any others that are burning, or overall, you really like the game. You really liked
overall,
it.
I really enjoyed it.
I
really did.
That's fair. That's really fair. Rank it 10, like out of 10. Ooh. I want a ranking.
Ooh.
I want a ranking.
You want a ranking?
Yeah.
Of course you want.
I want to rank it. I want it in this case.
I mean, in this case, based on this conversation.
Because I feel like we can talk about a game and I don't need to know how you rate it. I feel like you can tell me why you liked it, why you didn't, and be critical of it. And then overall, like say, you know, I enjoyed it or I didn't enjoy it, or I would revisit this, and that would be enough for me. But I feel like in this, and usually I don't need a number. But right now, I need a number. And it's got to be on a scale of 1 to 10.
Oh, man. I think I'm going to make it not simple for you. And I'm going to give you two ratings. I think my... If I had to rate like my player experience with the game, like the amount of fun that I had while playing it, like the amount of... Like my initial impression of how much I loved the game throughout my playthrough, I think I'd rate it a 9 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I think now that I've had a ton of time with it and now I have a chance to look at it critically, I think I'd give it like a 7, 7.5.
Wow.
Somewhere like that.
Okay.
don't know, it's easy to be in the honeymoon phase, I feel like, with it at first. Because yeah. I really was in it with that. Like, I was following every rumor, every, like right. development update, like, on the hype train for that game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got the Switch.
Yeah. I did buy the special edition.
You did buy the special edition Switch.
The OLED version.
I mean, I justified it because I didn't have an OLED. You were on
the
first yet.
Car in that.
I didn't have train. An OLED.
You were
yet.
Right next to the conductor. You're like, hey, look, can we get this train, can this we, hype train moving a little bit faster? Just a little faster. I got to get to my destination.
I got places to be, man.
Yeah, I can picture it.
You can't get away with this, though. What's your rating? Don't hold back.
Again, I think it's a great game. I would give it, because it is just Breath of the Wild again. But I think in a lot of like areas, they failed. And I think if you're going to take a 6-year gap between Zelda 1, Switch Zelda 1, and Switch Zelda 2, mm-hmm. if you're going to take a 6-year gap, I think I need a little bit more. And I think some things weren't effective. All the Sky Islands, super sparse. Mm-hmm. The Ultran ability is really, really cool. It's just not for me. Mm-hmm. We didn't really talk about the underground, mm-hmm. but I guess that adds more, mm-hmm. I suppose. A lot of the situations are different on the, you know, ground level. I would give it objectively as possible, I would give it a 9 out of 10. I wouldn't give it a 10 out of 10, but I would give it an objective rating of 9 out of 10. Okay. Because the game is not for me, my subjective rating and personal experience of it would be 6. I think it's a 6 right now, but that could go up upon revisiting it and maybe finding some bigger caves or something mm-hmm. like that. Maybe that's all it takes to get back to a 7 or an 8. But if I have to fly one more bird just to move a gem on a sky island, I'm probably going to flip my biscuit.
As you we don't want to flip any biscuits.
We don't want to flip
my no more biscuits.
No, don't flip the biscuits. This was a good conversation.
You feel a little lighter?
I feel a little lighter. Yeah. Yeah, unlike the Final Fantasy conversation.
We'll have to wrap that up.
We'll have to wrap that up. And then maybe I'll feel lighter. But I walked away from that one like, there's lead on my shoulders. Like, for some reason, I felt heavier. I just reminded myself why that experience was so grueling, and I put myself through it. But this was good. This was good. And it's also a funny time to be revisiting it, because the game is almost like, when did it release? A year ago?
July.
Yeah. Oh, July? Okay. So it's not that old, but it's...
I think July. Maybe June, but I think July. No. It's not even a year old yet.
Yeah.
You didn't even let it get... You're beating up an infant. You didn't even let it get a year old.
Right.
You're beating up a child. Right. Man. You didn't even let him get a year old. You didn't even let him get up. You didn't let the guy get up before you started beating him down.
Hey, man. That child is spoiled.
That is a spoiled child.
Spoiled child. Nintendo's a doting father.
You're right.
Damn. Well, with that, I think that's a wrap.
I think it's a wrap.
To you?
To me.
Ah, to me.
Ah, to me. To me?
To me?
Ah, to me.